Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South, joined on this episode by my guy, Eric Fawcett. Try to go through them all. Basket under review, Gator Country. Man, there's a lot. There's a lot. Check out Fawcett's Twitter profile. And I don't even think they're all listed there. So good luck, but he's all over the place, man. What's up, Fawcett? How was Spain?
Spain was great. So thank you to for you handling kind of those last weeks of some preview stuff. Yeah, I did some content from Spain on for the Patreon. So I was able to do a little bit from my Airbnb in one setting, and then the Wi-Fi at the old Spanish apartments, Airbnb, not so good. So I ended up doing one from the beautiful boardwalk in Alicante. So my third time in Spain. Of course, watching basketball, seeing some practices, doing all that. So it was great. The timing is just always, you know, on one hand, I try to get it in right before the college basketball season starts to obviously focus on my responsibilities for the college basketball season. But it also means those last couple of weeks are, you know, a little bit less available for podcasts. So I was able to do some Patreon content, of course, on my own time. That's one of the great things about the Patreon. Me and Neil are able to work at our own pace a little bit more there. And then had some writing preloaded as well for Gator Country. But Spain was great, and then got back just in time for the opening game of the season, and for Florida to take on Arizona kicking off the year.
Yeah, no, I got to say, the Boardwalk Patreon was super nice. I saw one of the comments. That was like a Fawcett take purge, and a lot of them were pretty, you know, came in handy really night one. Anyway, it was cool that I saw – we had so much comments on that, and then Eric's Arizona rap, and, you know, we had a bunch on the season preview that I did. So I think – anyway, appreciate our interactive listeners. If you're not subscribing to the Patreon, you should be. That's where the bulk of our content is these days. Patreon.com/FloridaBBHour is where you can go to subscribe. There are three membership tiers. The top tier is like $6 a month. The middle tier is $5. I think there's still a $3 tier. The Game Day Gator tier, you're not getting as much stuff. Like, you're going to get a game preview. You're going to get a wrap. That's about it that I sent to that tier. The other two tiers, like, the only difference between Six Man Club and Rowdy Reptile, because I've gotten asked this a couple times, is, like, we'll have, like, special film studies, maybe a recruiting film study, or, like, an entire SEC championship game rewatch, and, like, that goes to the Six Man Club people. Otherwise, most of our film study stuff is also going to go to the Rowdy Reptile. But anyway, there's three different tiers. It's worth it. Fawcett and I do like different stuff too. You know, I have a ton of content from SEC Media Days. There's still more of it that I'm going to post as like the opponents come up. And then, you know, Eric had take purges. He's got a lot of cool video breakdowns. It's interesting to watch even like the CJ Ingram film study now. And like, you could see his progression at Montverde. And now in two games, you could see his progression. Like, he's one of those players that started playing only basketball really late. So his curve seems to be a little higher, right, in terms of how quickly he's getting better. But anyway, a lot of stuff like that on the Patreon. Please go to patreon.com/FloridaBBHour. People ask all the time, how can you support the podcast? And that's what I tell them. I said the best actual way to support us is to subscribe to the Patreon. So please consider doing that. Yeah, and Florida playing that premier game on night one, full credit to Arizona and Florida for playing it. I'm not quite in Field of 68 land where I have to like rip the slate of games every single day. That's a little irritating, honestly, but I did think that like this was clearly the best basketball game of that day. And like other than St. John's Alabama yesterday, it's basically been the best game of the first week of the season. It was an excellent game. In the end, I thought that the team that had the best player in the game won. And if you wanted to make the argument that the team that had the two best players in the game won, I'm not going to hate that argument. I do think the better way maybe to phrase it is that Arizona had the best front court player and they also had the best guard.
Yeah, that's about it. And when that happens, you could see how things could get really crooked. And obviously it ended up being a game that was within an eyelash, really. You think about that Boogie Flan getting a second steal, or this one, you know, a little bit more where the, I forget who it was that Arizona was trying to inbound it to and threw it directly to Flan. He had the wide open corner three. He missed it, unfortunately. And for a lot of the discussion that I'm sure we'll get to about Florida shooting through two games, that's the one that maybe rings the most loud, the wide open corner three, which again is such a, no one practices those situations of like you're pressing fully, you suddenly get a ball thrown directly to you with no defender around, and then you've got to quickly take a couple steps, re-pivot from an angle you're not normally respacing from, and take a wide open corner three out of rhythm. Like, I don't want to make it sound like, wow, what a hard shot. It was a corner three, but it's also like that's just basketball. You don't make 100% of your wide open shots, and if you did, the sport would look a whole lot different. So that was a game that, to think that Jaden Bradley was the best player in the backcourt and Koa P was the best player in the frontcourt, at least in terms of performance, we can, you know, I'm not, I would still like some of, you know, Florida's guys season long here, but on that night, yeah, Jaden Bradley was a player that, I'll be honest, I didn't think was as good as he showed. I did video on that for our Patreon. I also did one at Basket Interview. Did not think Jaden Bradley had that. And early in the game, I was like, so it's Jaden Bradley, known as someone who doesn't get to the rim all that much, known as someone who loves to take pull-ups to the mid-range. Thinking about how Florida is going to play drop coverage, I was like, great, Jaden Bradley's going to take 17 mid-range jump shots. He's probably going to hit six of them, and that'll be great for Florida's defense. And he took a couple of those mid-range jumpers early, and I was like, oh, great, this is exactly what Florida wants. He even hit a tough one over Urban Klobzar at one point, but it was one of those ones that like Florida would live with 100 times out of 100. And I think the problem came with when Jaden Bradley, who was, again, someone not known for getting to the rim, suddenly got to the rim over and over and over again. And Florida's pick and roll coverage was really, really poor. And the number one thing the Patreon is good for is being able to show film on these things. But Neil, I couldn't believe it. I mean, to the eye test, it was like, wow, Florida's pick and roll coverage is really bad. Obviously, sometimes watching live, you miss things or you misremember things. Watching it back, I think it was worse than I remembered. And I think that on the Patreon, I showed 15 clips in Florida and pick and roll that that resulted in either a bucket or Florida committing a foul. So, I mean, 15, well, most of them were 2-point buckets at least, because Arizona didn't have to take threes. One of the absolute craziest stats of the game that Arizona only took 5 threes. So, I mean, you just think about like, okay, well, if that was, you know, 30 points right there in middle pick and rolls, that's huge. And, again, I thought that there was so many things wrong with that. To think about the fact that Florida has guarded pick and rolls the same way exclusively, since Golden got to town. Yes, you have some new players here, but it's about as simple a pick and roll coverage as there is. So to see Florida do it so poorly, to see Flan do it so poorly when this was an area that, again, Patreon people will remember. I pointed out how good Boogie Flan was in pick and roll coverage at Arkansas and how he was going to be perfect for Florida scheme and how there were so many communication breakdowns and he played so poorly. That was kind of the major concern. That was something that, again, I made a video right after the game, essentially, to get up to Patreon, because I thought it was really notable. Before we talk Pete, Neil, do you have any thoughts on either Jaden Bradley or yeah, this pick and roll coverage?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great video. It was a jarring video to watch. I thought, you know, I guess I kind of would add maybe two things. It's like, even on the pick and rolls where they didn't always get to their spot that they wanted to be on the floor, and I think on most of them they got wherever they wanted to go, Eric. But then there were a couple where, like, Florida didn't even try to tag, like, the roller. Like, he just – like, Cold Pete just rolled through people. Like, just nothing. Ruben Chinyelu, you know, was maybe the one guy who got in the way some. And Todd Golden mentioned, he was asked about pick and roll coverage at media availability. I won't say whether it's coincidental or not coincidental. I know that there are some media guys that watch a lot of basketball. I'm just saying that this was an interesting question coming hours after the Patreon was released. And somebody asking Todd Golden about it at media availability, and Todd just being like, well, you know, it wasn't just Boogie Flan, but when our guards are told weak and they don't go, that's problem one. And then he said, you know, we had two veteran guys in Rube and Alex who also just kind of kept getting stuck in no man's land and allowing rollers to get behind them. And he wasn't really sure what they were doing. Like, you know, because to your point, I think Florida would be more content with a mid-range jump shot than the sort of empty side lob pick and roll dunks. But it felt a lot like the Texas Tech game in that, like, there was just an action that Florida couldn't stop, and a really good coach just kept running it over and over and over again.
Yeah, the weak call is something that, again, I think that people should go watch the Patreon to see what we're talking about. But yeah, Florida essentially trying to send stuff to the left hand of ball handlers. And there was lots of times where the roller definitely called the weak, which means that they're getting to the left hand side of the ball handler. And that's often means rejecting the screen and the kind of like almost like icing. And a lot of people know what ice is, where ball handlers, defender, don't let them use the ball screen, keep them on one side. It's like doing that in the middle third. So there was times that Florida's bigs were calling weak. They were positioning themselves accordingly. And then Fland or Lee or Klavzar, all who were guilty of this, didn't send them to their weak hand. And that means that once guys get to their right hand, not only are they going to their dominant hand, but there's no support in the drop. So, and it's also one of those plays where I'm just going to say it too. And I actually don't have too much on this matter, Neil. You're welcome to jump in, but like, I thought Condon was criticized. Maybe I didn't think Condon played well in the first game. I do not think he played as badly as a lot of people thought, and I think a lot of the stuff he was getting called out for was a lot of these pick and roll plays where, again, if a big calls weak and the guard doesn't do it, it's the big who looks like they are way out of position. And a lot of Florida's bigs who, again, don't think they played great in a lot of ways. The one thing that Florida's bigs, I think, were getting crucified for is what was some of these plays that just looked so ugly because they looked so out of position, but it was actually the guard's fault. So definitely, again, that's something that is best seen on the Patreon and is something that once you now know about that weak coverage, you're now going to, like, it's one of those things like you know about it. Now you won't be able to unsee it. So yeah, it's kind of like concerning and not concerning. On one thing, that is a relatively easy thing to improve and practice and get better at. On the other hand, it is one of those things that, like, to be that bad on opening night of the season is unbelievable to me. So I just can't believe how unprepared they looked for essentially what's the most basic, straightforward pick and roll coverage, to be so unprepared to do that with a lot of, well, to be honest, I thought the bigs were actually pretty good. The one place I thought Condon was not very good in the drop, like, he's got to be a little bit better at making sure the roller doesn't get behind him in situations that it's an empty or where Florida's not tagging. But yeah, that was one thing where you see how these college basketball teams have so much time in the offseason, so much time leading up to the season, and like, how you can be that unprepared for middle pick and roll coverage was surprising. But yeah, I guess the silver lining is that's one of those things that, like, you can certainly get better at. And when it came to Pete, watching back Pete and him just going off, I mean, what an impressive player. He was just kind of on the cusp of, like, I don't want to make it sound like he was, like, slept on. Like, he was a five-star. He was, like, I don't know, eighth in the class, I think. So I don't want to make it sound like this was, like, a completely under-recruited three-star. But obviously a lot of Darren Peterson, AJ DeBansa, Cam Boozer, Mikael Brown, Nate Ament. Like, those would be the guys that I would say got, like, a ton of hype in the offseason. And, like, just on the cusp of that, who didn't get talked about was Koa Pete. So for him to kind of play the way he did was incredible. And I know that like, Hout came out and was like, yeah, like, we can't allow this as a front court. Like, this is embarrassing. This won't happen moving forward. Honestly, looking back at the performance, Pete had a whole bunch in with Florida's drop coverage being really bad. So that's a problem, obviously, but I don't put that on. I don't put that a ton on the front court. Like, again, I thought that Condon was not great in the drop at times. Chinyelo not great in the drop. I thought that he had a couple plays out of the short roll where he just made incredible plays. Did not put that on the front court. Like, that was just, there was a couple of really good plays. I did think that Ruben Chinyelo's individual defense on him was poor. And then I thought he hit some tough jump, some tough turnaround jumpers that were fairly well contested. So I don't look at Coapi going off and be like, wow, what an embarrassing showing for Florida's front court. And I, again, that was, of course, the narrative. And fair enough, like, people talk about Florida's front court as the best in the country or one of them. And then, you know, Coapi, like, single-handedly kind of cooks them in a number of ways. But I don't actually think that anyone was, like, embarrassed. And I think that that's also just basketball. Like, you look at someone gets 30 and you think, well, okay, what player was responsible? Like, whose head did he put 30 on? And it was kind of those things that, like, the short roll stuff he was doing was kind of scheme stuff. The pick and roll was like scheme stuff. And then he hit some really tough turnarounds or tougher ish turnarounds. That's where I think you can maybe look and just say, like, okay, it is worth noting that while Florida has, like, a lot of size in the front court, they don't have a lot of, like, athleticism. Like, these are not, like, the most explosive guys that, like, oh, an explosive athlete is going for a turnaround jump shot. Someone can, like, really meet him at the apex and bother him. And then, yeah, like, there's, you know, Chinyelo, I thought got worked on some really nice footwork at one point where he got stepped through. And then he had the one moment where he just kind of slipped, which I don't know if you can, that, you know, there's, didn't look great. It might've just been like a slip, but nothing more than that. But yeah, I don't actually look at this as some, like, indictment of Florida's front court.
Yeah, the one guy I thought was objectively not great to me for almost all his minutes was Chinyelo. Like, I just felt like he really struggled one-on-one. When Florida tagged, he was late. He didn't tag rollers well. I thought he got dunked on a couple short rolls. I just thought it was tough for him. And then offensively, I think, interestingly, like, I think Micah Hanlockton is such a better passer than Ruben Chinyelo, and so much less – I don't want to use the word selfish with Chinyelo. I don't think that's the right word. But I think Ruben gets the ball down low, and, like, he does look to score some, right? Like, he wants to get to the right shoulder and try to put the ball in the basket. And Micah Hanlockton gets the ball in the paint, and I think – generally is looking to pass and distribute. And I think for this team, one is better than the other right now at helping create offense. Like, if you'd ask me, is Micah Hanlockton distributing to Tommy Houck cutting a more, you know, effective way for Florida to attack a defense than Ruben Chinyelo trying to get to the right shoulder? Like, I'm going to take Tommy Houck attacking pretty much every single time. And so I do think that, you know, and look, we've had two games. Micah Hanlockton's played 41 minutes. He's got 28 points and 24 rebounds. Those are pretty preposterous numbers for 40 minutes of basketball. So it's worth monitoring. I don't think they're going to change his role, so we don't really need to have that conversation yet. You know, I think he's still going to come off the bench and Chinyelo's going to start, and they're not going to really change that. The way that Todd Golden messed with it in the past is to kind of switch who plays high leverage minutes. And I think that could be the switch that will be interesting to watch this week when Florida plays two Power Five teams that have at least one in particular in Miami that has a competitive chance against Florida, I would think. So so Chinyelo would be the guy that I'd kind of pick on. I didn't think Alex was great offensively, but I also think Arizona's front court had a lot to do with that, right? And, you know, I talked about Eric's right. I don't think Coapi, Caleb Wilson is another freshman who I don't think quite got the attention of the other elite freshmen. And they've both been really awesome to start the season, Pete and Wilson. Florida doesn't play UNC this year, but they do play Arizona. And so when I was doing a schedule preview, I think I spent 10 minutes on Coapi in a Patreon video in August, just talking about how he's won a lot. He's also 20, which, you know, like, he looks it. You know, if you wanted to know why he's a chiseled mound of rebound, it's because he's 20 years old and he's played on four FIBA USA teams, right? With the guys that Eric was mentioning that are all awesome. So, you know, just a really good player. And I think that'll be one of the better front courts that Florida plays. And I think Florida held their own in the front court. Ultimately, like, they lost. They still had a chance to win. They went 7-for-27 from three-point range. Many of those very open shots. I saw Kevin Sweeney, your guy that you co-host a show with, mentioned that. You know, and if you're Florida, I think you take a lot from this, but you're certainly not in panic mode yet.
Yeah, so the three-point shooting one is interesting. And I also – oh, I forget who pointed this out, but I really wish I could give them credit. Maybe you saw this, Neil. But someone tweeted, and I'm sure people listening to this will will have seen this.
Oh, you're going to say Jackson Raymer, who's from the again, I got to plug the fact that he has a show, Breakfast with the Gators, that's on the Stadium and Gale Network. Okay, we're good.
Yeah, I was going to say it's Jackson, and then I, for some reason, I just had like hesitancy, didn't want to get it wrong. So everyone go see Jackson's tweet. But he just pointed out how last year, Florida also started the season with like not shooting the ball well through the first couple of games. And of course, Florida goes on to really shoot the ball well the rest of the season. So that would be the, you know, one of the positive kind of reasons to not overreact. I do think that I feel a little bit differently than I would looking even back at last year. Because if you look at last year and Florida started not shooting the ball well, there was some pedigree of, you know, Walter Clayton was a good shooter because he had shot well in the past. Elijah Martin had shot well in the past. Will Richard had shot well in the past. Past that, you didn't know exactly what to expect from like a Denzel Aberdeen, an Alex Condon, a Thomas Houck, and those guys went on to shoot the ball adequately. I do think there's a little bit more of a concern this year when you say, okay, Florida has not shot the ball well, and you look at Xavien Lee, who wasn't again, not a great shooter. Like, yes, he shot 37% last year, but he shot 34% the year before, and he shot 33% in conference play. And of course we know from people who watch Patreon will know that Xavien Lee is someone who takes all of his or makes all of his shots off the dribble and not as much off the catch. Then you look at Boogie Fland, and Boogie Fland was someone who shot 34% from three last year, and he shot 28% in SEC play. Obviously, didn't play a ton of games in SEC play, but so it's one of those things that, one, if you look at like last year versus this year, well, last year you had guys that had proven they could make shots consistently at this level. And this year you don't have the same level of guys that have proven that they can shoot the ball at this level. I'm not saying they cannot, but there is less like established, you know, these guys can do it. I will also say this, when it comes to 3-point shooting, it is almost always a statistically driven evaluation. Whenever we talk about a transfer, we say, okay, well, you know, what is their percentage? And then for those of us with the ability to go a little bit deeper with stats, we can go to things like synergy if we have access and say, okay, well, they shot this off the dribble versus this off the catch. And you can look at, but it's just, you know, generally speaking, it's like somewhat of a statistically driven argument. When you look at the threes that Florida took in the first two games, first of all, one thing, they took a lot of really wide open ones and they missed those. That might have some concern. The other part of it, from the eye test element of it, like, these misses were horrific. Like, I got to the point where there was guys on Florida that every time they were putting up threes, I didn't know if it was going to hit the rim or not. Like, the amount of air balls, backboard, skidding off the outside of the rim. Like, it's one thing to be like, oh, you know, some shots didn't fall when hit the back of the rim, then the front of the rim, then the back of the rim and spilled out, or something that spun around three quarters of the rim and spilled out and you miss. Like, these misses were ugly in a lot of settings. So I do have some concern. Neil, you were kind of the one who talked about Florida shooting as a possible concern. You talked about it a lot more than I did before the season. So it's something that like I didn't have as much concern as you did, and now I am very quickly concerned. I've joined the ranks of like somewhat concerned here, just because of, again, there's not a lot of history to go back on and say like, oh, well, given the history, these guys can make shots this level. And also going back and watching them, like my God, like side of the backboard, air ball, hitting the backboard outside of the square and not hitting, like these misses were ugly. So I have some caution here. I'm not ready to like declare state of emergency, But I do think there's reason for concern. But very, really good from like Jackson to point out, you know, last year stats, there's going to be a lot of people that aren't concerned, and that is great. Curious to see where you land.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't hit over 35% in a game until Florida State last year, which was game four. So they were pretty bad through three games. Now, I'm with you. I thought some of the really open looks that they missed badly were definitely concerning. I would point out that, like, I saw a lot of skating of Urban Klavsar, and, like, I thought his shots looked pretty good and didn't go in for the most part. And, you know, I think Alex Lloyd had one air ball. His other four all looked pretty good. He had a late shot clock air ball in the corner that I think he would love to have back. But, you know, I think there's some guys that can shoot it. But, yeah, to Eric's point, much less pedigree. Hauk's shots have looked okay. He's had a couple that looked pretty bad. He's had a couple that looked pretty good. You know, he's been Florida's best player through two games. I don't think that should surprise anybody. But, yeah, I mean, they're just going to have to get more out of Boogie in particular from an offensive standpoint. And then the question on Xavien is, like, can he be a catch-and-shoot guy sometimes? Or does he really need a couple dribbles to kind of set himself? Because they're going to need him to make some catch-and-shoot shots. It was good to see him make one at the end of the UNF game. You know, Florida had their starters out there a little late in that game and ran a couple plays for Xavien Lee, and just to see him knock one down. But right now the splits between Boogie and Xavien are not awesome in terms of, like, which one, when one is on and the other is off. And I saw CB Analytics has some on-off splits where, you know, you can look at what Fland and Florida are operating at from a points per possession standpoint with Fland on and with Fland off. And to go from, like, the 94th percentile with him on to the 70th percentile with him off is actually a pretty significant, even in two games, that's 24 percentiles. So I'm going to monitor that a little bit, because they're clearly a more organized offense when Fland is out there, even though he's not hitting shots right now. And so, like, I guess the question conceptually, schematically, however you want to talk about it, is, like, what do you do to make the offense flow a little better when it is Xavien Lee and when Boogie's on the bench?
Yeah, and that's kind of a general question too, this, or through two games where we have seen more Urban Klavsar. And I think he's played a little bit more than I expected him to. And then also I would say that, you know, their returns have not necessarily been great. This is someone that fans are not 100% behind, both for the fact that he's 2 for 10 from three. And that's a guy that is a guy that, you know, it's he's the one guy that the misses look okay, I guess. But at the same time, it's like, it took him a little while to get going last year, shooting the three, and someone who shot the ball really well in Spain, and hasn't been the case yet. And then for someone who has been known for, again, this was a guy that played a lot of professional minutes in good leagues. And as a point guard, he is like, some of the turnovers he had, the issues with ball security, like, that is just the absolute last thing that can happen for him. He was someone that is undersized, not athletic, not super fast, but the idea was like, okay, well, this is someone who is a veteran ball handler, so he's not going to turn the ball over. He's going to make great plays with the ball. We saw some of the excellent passing last year, and he's going to make shots. Through two games, he has not made shots and has had a couple really rough turnovers. So that's kind of interesting to see as well. Someone that I would have conceptually thought that him being out there would also really help the offense flow. And I do think to an extent it does. And, this is another thing that I actually do really kind of like what I'm seeing from Florida. After last year, when the Gators didn't have a point guard really, or a kind of true point guard, outside of the minutes of Klavsar off the bench, to go to Boogie, Fland and Lee, like, I really do think, like, the multiple ball handlers, it looks really good at multiple times, the way that they get the ball up the floor so much more efficiently, because they don't need to look for Walter Clayton is the only guy they could really look for, just to see, like, Florida gets a defensive rebound and one wing is Boogie Flan, one wing is Xavien Lee or Urban Klavsar. I just thought the way that they were able to flow into their offense quickly was really good. I thought that the ball was moving really efficiently. I thought once the ball got, once there was penetration, the ball started getting around the perimeter, having multiple guys that are comfortable handling and punching and making a great next pass. I did think there were some really good returns from these three guards playing a lot. At some point, the major issue is three guys who are not making shots. And also three guys who don't finish at the rim. And I think that that's something that I probably didn't think about enough, because I was someone who pointed out with both the pickups of Xavien Lee and Boogie Fland that these are guys that really struggle to finish at the rim at two different levels, of course. And we have seen that manifest itself in two separate ways. On one hand, you do see it straight. Like Boogie Fland and Xavien Lee and Urban Klobzar are just like not trying to get to the rim. And sometimes they would get dribble penetration and they were driving to pass, which works. And I even thought that, I thought that Xavien Lee was getting way overplayed at times. Like if I was thinking from the opponent's standpoint, I think, you know, long time podcast listeners will remember that I pointed out with Andrew Nembhard that to start the season, because he was getting so many assists, was just breaking down defenses so much, because every time he got dribble penetration, he would make the right pass every time to a cutter, to a shooter, to a roller, whatever the case may be. And as soon as there was a second defender on him, he was making the right read. And then teams started to realize, hey, this Andrew Nembhard guy, like he might be the best passer we've ever seen, but he does not want to try to finish at the rim. And then they just straight up stopped helping and really challenged him to finish at the rim, and he couldn't. And that became a little bit of an issue for him. Obviously, he's went on to, you know, solve those problems and have a very good NBA career. But at the time, it was a major problem in his first and second year in college basketball. I look at like Lee, and I couldn't believe how much like Arizona was like scrambling to try to send defenders to like hinder him on drives. Cause I was like, if I'm Arizona, I'm trying to let Xavien Lee finish the rim. And if you remember the times he did, he got blocked at the rim twice, which I would say says a little bit about the maybe athleticism finishing concerns. He also had a jump shot blocked. To have three field goal attempts blocked in one game is a concern. And then with Fland, I would say particularly, at least like I would say Lee was reluctant to try to finish at the rim, but he a couple of times got there and then he got blocked, but he at least went and took attempts at the rim, where Boogie Fland was just not interested in trying to finish at the rim unless it was a wide open lane there. So that is, I would say, one of my, you know, that would be another concern, is like you got three guards that are not making shots and are not finishing at the rim. But man, I think they're really moving the ball and punching the event. Like Xavien Lee, like against Arizona, still getting in the paint whenever he wants. What happens once he gets there? TBD. Passes the ball really well out of there, doesn't score well out of there.
Yeah.
But there are some good returns, but if we are also looking for like some element of concern, you know, we talked about how we think that these guys, while there's not a ton of shooting pedigree, I think we probably agree, or I'll speak for myself, that Lee and Fland are good shooters, and I think we'll shoot the ball better, and Klobs are as well. I'm not convinced that they'll finish at the rim better. That is one thing that I think kind of is what it is. I think they will shoot the three better. I think the finishing at the rim, I think that is what it is. I don't see suddenly these guys getting more athletic, more adept at taking contact and finishing. More willing to maybe more willingness if you just, you know, really give them the confidence. But that is going to be one area of concern, and that's just one of the things that points to the fact that like these guys will have to shoot the ball well, because they're not going to be going and challenging guys at the rim and getting buckets.
Yeah, I would note that Zay Brown got some run against North Florida too, and at least was willing to attack the rim, but 2 of 5 at the rim too against UNF. So it's not like there's, oh, play Isaiah Brown, that's a great long-term solution, let's see what happens. I do think eventually, you know, you can see it with Alex Lloyd from an eye test standpoint. I think I don't know how much, he certainly wasn't willing to try to drive too much. I think his one drive in the UNF game, he actually got fouled and went to the free throw line, and then after shooting 93% on free throws in high school, proceeded to miss both free throws. But I think on that play, he was just trying to get Ollie Ryu the ball. And he didn't expect to necessarily get fouled or have to take the free throws. Anyway, we'll see. I'm interested to see if Alex gets run against non-bye game opponents or if Florida kind of trims its rotation up again. I think a lot of that may depend on Urban Klavzar, who apparently has inherited Walter Clayton's one fabulously loud turnover at night award without any of the awesome Walter Clayton stuff that comes with it. So, you know, so always, we can always make fun of the performance art when Walt was doing the other things he was doing. Urban Klavzar doing none of those things, which is a little concerning. Bright spots for me, like, again, like this is a like I thought Florida's against UNF, you know, who I don't think has a ton, but UNF made some really tough shots. I thought Florida Florida defended better. They pressured the ball better. Everything was better against UNF, as you'd expect. Hard to take a lot from that game, except that it was a good response from Florida's front court. And then to see Micah Hanlockton play that well a second time and have Florida clearly have four guys that they very much trust inside the paint, I think is extremely promising. I also think CJ Ingram's play through two games has been pretty encouraging, Eric. Like he, I definitely think their best defensive lineup right now involves CJ Ingram being on the floor. And whether it's Houck and Hanlockton or Houck and Condon Ingram, and then probably Flan and Klavzar at this point, you know, however you want that to look, that seems to be the lineup that if you have to get a stop, like that would be what I might go with right now. It'll be more interesting when Florida plays a team that can punch back a little bit again. I don't know if that team is Florida State. We should talk about them for a few minutes and talk about Miami. We have, by the way, at patreon.com/FloridaBBHour, previews of those already up. And we're going to have a second Florida State preview that will drop tomorrow that Fawcett's already done. So there will technically be me talking about Florida State and then Eric showing you Florida State. And then there will be me spending a lot of time on a Miami team that, like, in football, they have that cool talent composite thing. And you can go, like, oh, Florida has more talent than Ole Miss. But Ole Miss is in the top five, and Florida lost 38-7 to Kentucky. Or, you know, that is not a thing. There's no talent composite in basketball. I think it would be really hard to do because of the portal, too.
Yeah.
But if you just look at recruiting rankings, Miami actually has five blue-chip players. Like, they have assembled a roster. Now, I don't think it's very good offensively. They've looked great offensively in two games against nobody. But I do think they'll guard Florida, and that will be interesting. So definitely go to patreon.com/FloridaBBHour to check that out. But, Eric, you got a kind of some overview thoughts on the Seminoles under Luke Laux.
Yeah, I think the big thing – I mean, hey, Neil, you were talking about how we both have preview content on Patreon for it. I mean, we're doing what we can here to make this game a little bit more hyped. Because it just is, like, the weirdest rivalry in that – like, I'll be honest, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, it just – it has lost all spice. Like, it just doesn't feel like much of a rivalry game. And maybe I'm not the one to say that as someone who was not born into this rivalry, someone who doesn't live in the state. So you can tell me if I'm wrong, but on one hand, it's the fact that, yeah, obviously for a number of years, these were two places or places that, not known for their basketball fandom as much as their football fandom. So like the fan engagement has not been totally there. And then just the way that when Florida had lean years, Florida State was really good. So those games were not particularly competitive. And then of course, Florida State wins seven in a row, which kind of can take the wind out of some sails of some rivalry. And now Florida's kind of punched back with four. And then you can also look at the fact that at least when Florida State was winning seven in a row, some of those games were close. And I think that's kind of one of the true markers of like a real rivalry is when you can kind of throw out, and you see this in college football all the time. And I'm no college football expert, as everyone here knows, but that is something that's kind of special about college football, I think, is when there's a rivalry game between two schools in state or whatever the rivalry might be. And like one team is like 500 and is having a down year, and one team is in the top 15 and is looking to, you know, play in a good bowl, compete for a conference set, and somehow that game still ends up being within one score, because like that's just what happens in rivalry games. You can kind of throw out the rankings, throw out the talent composite. There's something there that just makes that just that hasn't totally been like the case. Again, Florida kind of brought that when they were still losing seven in a row. They had a couple of competitive ones, but then these last four wins for the Gators have all been, I think the closest margin of victory was nine. Other than that, Florida's really just won comfortably. So a game that has not had a lot of spice in recent years, and I would love to see it kind of get up there. And in terms of just overarching thoughts about Florida State, and this is where showing some video on Patreon is big, but it is important that everything you know about Florida State, like, you forget. Like, so now that it's Luke Laux taking the helm at head coach, Leonard Hamilton is gone. Leonard Hamilton, of course, had a very distinct style of play, bringing in as many long athletes and seven footers as possible, denying ball pressure, playing fast, just getting the ball on the backboard and getting offense, rebounds, and finishing. That is not the case anymore. Now, they do have some good size, but it is not guys who are those like Florida State athletes. They have played extremely, extremely fast through two games. It has been two very poor bye game opponents in Alcorn State and Alabama State, two teams that might be out of the top 300 of KenPom by the time this posts. But Laux coming from the NBA definitely wanted to bring a little bit more of an offensive style. And I think when you look at their roster, it's a lot of guys that have experience and can make shots. There is not a lot of individual creation or a lot of flash, but there is guys that are capable, 6 foot seven wings that can actually shoot. So a lot more shooting than we've seen from Florida State in recent years. And then again, an offense that is much less of a slog. And then the one player I'll note, because again, we don't want to do our, you know, our full half an hour type breakdown we normally would on teams like this. The one player that I do think people need to note is Robert McCray. And that name might actually sound familiar because we talked about him last year when he was at Jacksonville and he played against the Gators. He had 20 points against the Gators, so had a very good game. Though notably, he had zero assists. And I will say that is notable for this reason. In Florida State's first game of the season against Alcorn State, Robert McCray had 12 points and 17 assists. Which is just obviously getting 17 assists is unbelievable. It takes a little bit of, you know, assists are not a great stat. It requires guys to, you know, make shots, and sometimes great passes don't lead to buckets, but he had 17 assists and two turnovers in the opening game, and he had five assists and three turnovers against Alabama State. So he also just brings like this, like, playmaking element that Florida State hasn't had. And if any of you kind of remember from last year as well, he is like 6'4 and 190. Like, he is, like, even though he's at Jacksonville, he started his career at, oh, I'm blanking, I think maybe Wake Forest. But he has legit high major size. He is legit physical. And I guess my last point, as I keep saying, my last point, and then I continue to talk. Neil, you talked again before the season about the maybe concerns about the lack of physicality and size in Florida's backcourt. Well, the backcourt of Florida State, you know, 6'4", 190, Robert McCray, who's very good, very physical, 6'5", 210-pound Kobe McGee. He was at Drexel last year, hit 44% of his threes. He's 7-for-14 from three in the first two games of the season. Legii Jones, 6'7", wing type from St. Bonaventure, tough St. Bonaventure style wing, who's also hit 38% of his threes last year, is 6-for-8 from three to start the season. So I do think that the size in the backcourt could be a strength for Florida State. But yeah, very different Florida State team, who is putting up a lot of threes, has a lot of guys very capable of making them. And again, not super athletic, not super flashy, but size and experience.
Yeah, and Lehigh Jones was the leading scorer on a St. Bonaventure team. It was pretty good, and I think they had a guy taking the first round of the NBA draft. If he wasn't, he was taken right at the beginning of the second round. Fawcett might know that, but in any event, a pretty good player. Chauncey Wiggins is also super interesting just because he kind of got, like, Brad Brunell did not know that, like, Victor Latkin was going to be Victor Latkin, like, at the beginning of the year last year. And so they had this pretty big role carved out for Chauncey Wiggins at Clemson. And by the NCAA tournament, he was a 15-minute guy off the bench. I think he probably would have had a bigger role for Clemson this year, but he was the one guy that Florida State spent NIL on. Just an interesting matchup, a guy who's been to the Elite Eight, who's played tough bigs. That'll be a fun one with him and Condon, because they both run the floor well, and and can get out and move a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that that's kind of, you know, talking about them getting out and running the floor. Like, another thing about this game is about and kind of the lack of the enthusiasm about it was even when Florida was in their, you know, slightly leaner years and Florida State was winning, it was not in a very enjoyable game to watch because of the style of play that Florida State plays. It's impressive. They had a ton of success. I'm not trying to speed up, but not like a neutral observer did not love watching Florida State play, even when they were doing incredible things. I think people forget just how good they were at the top of the ACC when Louisville and Duke and North Carolina and Virginia were all really good and winning national championships. And Florida State was right up there with them, either winning the ACC or coming second. So they had incredible stuff. But again, not a game that I think people are like, wow, I can't wait to watch that game. From a style of play basketball standpoint. And then, of course, the last 4 years with Leonard Hamilton, when they were not very good and they couldn't get talent and they didn't have NIL, they also, not only were they not talented, but they, again, still played a style of play that was not fun to watch. And even when Florida's winning these games, I don't think anyone looks back at those wins and says, oh, those are the most enjoyable wins to watch of the season. I do think this team is much more aesthetically pleasing, and that's why I did wanted to make sure to show some film on Patreon, just to get people out of the mindset of like, this is not your grit and grind Florida State anymore. And this game's gonna be played fast. The two concerns, again, I would say for Florida are the physicality in the backcourt of Florida State and the fact that Florida State, who again has played two very bad teams, but they're making shots and they have guys who have proven in the past they can make shots. So I think their shot making is somewhat for real. And at some point, again, we'll see if Florida's shooting problems are for real or if they are a much better team than they've shown. But yeah, I think Florida does have a little bit more individual playmaking. Florida has, you know, the deeper front court, as Florida will have the deeper front court against just about anyone. But some good pieces. You know, Alex Steen, really interesting player in the front court for Florida State. He was at Florida Southern, a Division II school. I mean, and I say that with a grain of like, they were a Division II school, but they're a Division II school that would beat 100 mid majors every year, so, or low major teams. So functionally, like getting a guy from the like a 250th ranked KenPom team, and he's been really good, but they don't have a lot of really, you know, really good starting front court. Not as much depth as Florida, but yeah, I think this is one of the ones you just hope that if it's a high possession game, it's not a situation where Florida's hovered around the 25% from three and Florida State's up there at 37-40.
Yeah, I think that's right. And these are, I mean, every time Florida plays this year, they're going to get the best shot from everyone, that kind of whole like intangible thing that you want to talk about, but it's such a huge thing for Florida State. Like Michael Alford, the Florida State athletic director, was super honest, kind of in a refreshing way, when he hired Luke Laux, and he was like, we wanted to get somebody who understood basketball and loved Florida State because we don't have NIL and everything we're doing right now is focused on rebuilding our football program. he said this out loud. And he's like, we would like Luke to find an innovative way to be competitive. And we believe he can do that. And so when they're like, here's $3.5 million, please compete in the ACC. You know, yeah, you take a kid from Florida Southern. You take a Thomas Passong from France, an overtime elite, and say, hey, we're going to put you in big time minutes at the four right away. You know, and that's just what Laux just took. So, like, anytime he can be competitive in a game like this, it's proof of concept. So that feeds into that sort of intangible factor. But, yeah, I mean, right now the rivalry has been boring for a decade. I'm sure Florida fans would love it to stay that way on Tuesday night. Check out the previews at patreon.com/FloridaBBHour. I'll let Eric sign us off. It's been a bit since we've gotten a Fawcett sign-off.
Go Gators and keep attacking closeouts.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply. COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.